This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
We are back for another edition of the MMA Report podcast with Dan Galvan. I am Jason Foyt. It is Wednesday, November the 18th, 2020. We are here to talk about the latest and greatest in the world of mixed martial arts. We're going to start off the program by talking about some of the top headlines over the last week. We're going to talk a little UFC, Bellator, and then even get a PFL, which is I will basically describe as the WTF moment of the week in MMA. Then we're going to talk about the top list that ESPN put together, the top 25 fighters that are under the age of 25. And then we're going to end the show by previewing this week's MMA. Of course, on Thursday, we got Bellator 253 headlined by Darren Caldwell, AJ McKee, semifinal matchup in the Featherweight World Grand Prix. And then we'll talk about Saturday's UFC 255, of course, headlined by two flyweight title fights. You got Davison Figueiredo being challenged by Alex Perez, and then Valentina Shevchenko defending her title against Jennifer Maia. Throughout the show, we're going to tell you about our sponsors of this week's podcast. That is Roman and Fubo TV. We'll tell you about the special offers they have for the MMA Report podcast. Listener Daniel, good morning. How you feeling, bro?
Jason, I'm feeling good, man. I'm feeling really jazzed up about this episode of the podcast because there's so many different topics. We have plenty of action in the rearview mirror we're going to touch on, plenty of absurdity with the judging, and of course, we have a UFC show with two title fights. We have one of the top Bellator fights of the year on the dock. We have plenty of craziness with the PFL, interesting articles from ESPN. There's so much to talk about. I'm so excited. I just want to note that yesterday I was watching The Bachelorette at work. Not like I wasn't focused on The Bachelorette, but it was on the television screen, and it was a pleasant surprise to see Tatiana Suarez on the television set. She was on The Bachelorette, not competing, but she was going with some of the male contestants and showing them how to shoot in for a double leg takedown. So I wanted to note, Jason, that Tatiana Suarez was in fact on The Bachelorette. MMA is breaking through.
Yeah, I did see another MMA reporter did note about Tatiana Suarez being a part of The Bachelorette. I can honestly say I've never watched the episode of The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, and obviously did see that. We do want to talk and start off this podcast by talking about the top headlines in MMA. And you know, as I think about over the last week of, you know, to me, like I have two headlines that are really top to me. So they're like 1A, 1B, and I'll start on the UFC side of things. And that's what we saw last Saturday at the UFC Fight Night card there in Vegas. Of course, Rafael Dos Anjos getting a decision win over Paul Felder. But, you know, really my big headline of the week has to do with the judges' scoring that we saw in two of the fights on that card. First up, the Kay Hansen and Corey McKenna fight. I thought that was Kay Hansen 2-1. It doesn't go her way. You feel bad for it because I think pretty much a majority of the people agreed with her winning that fight, but she doesn't get the win. And then, you know, like if you think about, like, if you took a picture that kind of summed up last week and it was like the picture of the week in MMA, to me it would be the look Paul Felder gave when Bruce Buffer says Chris Lee scores the fight 48-47 Felder. I don't think any, you know, look, I thought it was a very clear win for RDA. I thought it was 5-0. I think you can definitely make the argument that maybe Paul got one round, but like that to me, like as I think my takeaways, it's just the scoring that we saw in those two fights at the UFC Fight Night card.
Yeah. I thought the Paul Felder decision was really, really, really bad. I mean, obviously the right person won, and it's the most fitting way for this fight to take place because it's a microcosm of RDA's entire career. I mean, we're talking about one of the most underrated fighters in UFC history. This is a Hall of Famer, former champion. And so often, his entire career, he is always overshadowed by someone else. RDA comes out here, he beats up Paul Felder, wins a clear decision, and the only thing people can talk about is Paul Felder. Paul Felder's awesome interview after the fight where he called out people for missing weight, and Paul Felder's weird scorecard from Chris Lee. We're not talking about RDA, who returns to the lightweight. And that's such a fitting way for this to go for Dos Anjos. But simply put, Chris Lee was insane, right? He legitimately was insane. No person. MMADecisions.com is a great resource, right? They tabulate all the media scores. They had the scorecards readily available. No MMA reporter gave more than one round to Paul Felder. Paul Felder's own corner was like, after round three, you need to finish this fight. And the idea that Felder won rounds two and three is just insane to me. And Chris Lee is going to have to wear this one for a while. Obviously, there's concern about whether or not the Nevada Athletic Commission will hold him accountable. The answer is probably no. But from an MMA observer standpoint, this is not, now a couple of high-profile fights where Chris Lee has been the dissenting opinion. The narrative is starting to form around Chris Lee that out of all the judges, he may be one of the worst ones we see on a routine basis in Nevada. So for Chris Lee, that scorecard was simply embarrassing. There's a difference between close scorecards, bad scorecards, and scorecards that are natural disasters. And 48-47, Paul Felder, Jason, I mean, that's a natural disaster.
It was a bad couple of days for the Nevada State Athletic Commission. We looked at Saturday night with the scoring of the two UFC fights I mentioned. Then, of course, they had the replay debacle with the top-ranked show and Dana White going off on Bob Arum last night following the Contender Series. And, of course, on the Contender Series, you've got a stoppage in the main event where it's kind of, you know, did the fighter go out or not at the end of the round? And it appears that no replay was used, even though they can use replay now in Nevada at any moment. So it was a bad moment. But, I mean, look, you bring up a great point of, you know, really the narrative coming out of that UFC card should be about what RDA looked like. And, of course, you know, we all know the story about how Paul stepped up on short notice. Sounds like he got a nice new contract. And of course, he mentioned about how he was weighing 180 pounds on Monday, drops down to 155, makes weight. And you mentioned about what he said about, you know, after the fight was over, how fighters need to make weight. And hell, Paul Felder was calling the Contender Series fights last night. So that's something, but you know, really the narrative around that card should be about what RDA does. And we'll see maybe if the fight against Islam, you know, gets booked. It sounds like maybe he's going to be ready sometime early on in the first quarter of 2021. But, you know, to me, like, my 1B headline of the week has got to be from Thursday night at Bellator 252 with Patricio Pitbull. He made it look so easy. I mean, it just, and I tweet after the fact, like, and I know this will never happen, Daniel. So let me just preface it in this way. But if you told me Patricio Pitbull, Alexander Volkanovsky was booked for the first quarter of 2021, and you tell me, who am I betting on? I'm betting on Patricio Pitbull. I think there is a argument to have that Patricio Pitbull is the best featherweight in the world. Now, look, I think if, you know, I like his chances much more against Alexander Volkanovsky than I do against Max Holloway. I think Max Holloway could give him some trouble. But right now, if you tell me who is the best 145-pound fighter in the world, I'm saying Patricio Pitbull.
It's really hard for someone to put themselves in that group when you're not fighting the UFC, but Patricio Pitbull has certainly done that. And fortunately, Bellator's giving him those tough tests, Jason. This tournament is just such an awesome, awesome deal here. We get to see him fight the winner of Mickey Caldwell, potentially, in the finals. But first, he's got to get through a very tough Emmanuel Sanchez, who looked great in his own right against Daniel Weichel. So this is a division where Bellator is doing a good job of setting fights up for Patricio that really validate him and reinforce him as possibly the best featherweight in the world. I can't sit here and tell you Patricio Pitbull is not, Jason. I also, no one can unequivocally say he is the best featherweight in the world, but he certainly is a part of that group. He has a right to that title. I think from the outside looking in, you look at the quality of competition and just the championship wins, I would still put Volkanovski and Max Holloway above Patricio Pitbull. If we were doing an official featherweight rankings, gun to my head, Volkanovski versus Pitbull, I think it's hard not to pick Pitbull. It's just a more exciting pick, especially the way he fights. But I do think I would land back on Volkanovski. But
It's really tough because the thing with Patricio Pitbull is his hands are absolute dynamite. They're absolute fire as he just completely pieced away Carvalho in that main event. And it looks easy. And he's so really talented on the ground as well. This is a fighter who's elite in every aspect of the game. And when you look at the zip on his punches, the power on his punches, I think that's the big differentiator between him, Holloway, and Volkanovski. I think if all of those three guys went up to that boxing machine where you punch the thing and you see how hard you hit, I think Patricio is going to have the highest score of the three. So I think his knockout power is probably what separates him from both Holloway and Volkanovski. So I can't unequivocally tell you, Jason, Patricio Pitbull, man, he's the best featherweight in the world. But I certainly can't tell you he's not. He is just a part of that group. And you know how hard it is to be a part of that group when you don't have Zuffa, or Zuffa's no longer the owner. You see, writing those checks, it's pretty damn hard, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, look, you mentioned Emmanuel Sanchez looked unbelievable against Daniel Vitchell. Look forward to seeing that rematch. Of course, they fought a couple of years ago where Pitbull got the win. And I mean, look at it. And I think with Patricio Pitbull, like right now, he has got to be the biggest fan of Michael Chandler, because if Michael Chandler can come into the UFC and have success, it's just going to make Patricio Pitbull look even better. And look, it's just, you know, I mean, Pedro Carvalho is a tremendous fighter, and he just made it look so damn easy. I think that just tells you how good of a fighter Patricio Pitbull is, a guy that was, you know, I mean, a severe reach disadvantage in that fight. And you know, he's a guy that he is going to make it a phone booth fight. And man, he looked absolutely amazing. You know, my next headline of the week that I mentioned and sticking from that Bellator card and going to that preliminary card is Aaron Pico. And when you look at the difference in Aaron Pico right now, and you look at what Greg Jackson, Mike Winklejohn, the entire coaching staff there at Jackson Wink have done with Aaron Pico over the last year and a half, it is amazing to see the difference in this guy under the leadership of Jackson Wink as opposed to the previous coaching staffs that he is under. Because, I mean, just the wrestling he's using, mixing everything up. I mean, his wrestling was dominant, you know, in that fight and his previous fights, you know, under Jackson Wink. And then, of course, just an absolute brutal knockout. I mean, you look at Aaron Pico and, you know, and obviously there's kind of been a little bit of a slower build with him, you know, now as opposed to what it was earlier on in his career, which I do not believe that was the route that Bellator wanted to go. I think there was other people that wanted to see that route go the way it is. But, man, I am blown away with what Aaron Pico has transformed his career under the leadership of Greg Jackson and Mike Winklejohn.
Yeah, I think he looked amazing, right? The knockout was just, if anybody saw anything from the Bellator card, the one thing they probably saw was Aaron Pico's knockout, even more so than Patricio Pitbull. I saw that one floating around the internet more, which is a bit surprising, right? One's the main event, one's not, but I felt as though Aaron Pico's knockout was both just so brutal, and also there's just something about Aaron Pico. I mean, he has that it factor when it comes to the idea of who he is and who he could be. And it's the type of thing where people want to watch him fight because the idea of him with his background in wrestling and the way people talked about him before he debuted, the idea is this is the next great fighter. And obviously that idea was stifled and stunted for a good portion of the early part of his career. But it looks like the prodigal son has returned. For Pico, he's passing every test. Now with this win over John De Jesus, the question now is, all right, I guess it's time for you to graduate to the next grade, Aaron Pico. And now it's time to see if that adjustment to Jackson Wink, how effective it was. Because now it's time to throw him back in the wolves, right? Like, you don't have to go out there and put him against Patricio Pitbull. Okay, that won't happen until 2022, I don't think. Maybe the end of 2021. You know, the MMA world spins a lot faster than I think we realize. But, Aaron Pico, it's time for you to fight some main card featherweights. And it's time to see what you've got. I'm very excited about the future of Aaron Pico's career. Again, I don't think he needs to go up there against one of the three or four best featherweights on the Bellator roster, but I do think his next fight should probably be against a veteran, scrappy Bellator featherweight who has had victories in the promotion. I think that's the type of fight you should give him, because right now, Aaron Pico, with the inclusion of his takedown games to start off his fights, and with his already dynamic power and striking, I think it's hard not to think this guy's ready for that step up in competition. I think for Aaron Pico, simply put, you're going to continue to have to monitor the striking defense. That appears to be an issue for him, and less so, obviously, with the win streak. But it's one of those things that it's very hard to correct dramatically. And so I'm always concerned about that anytime he's going up against a guy with great hands or great kicks, because I feel like that's where he leaves himself open for a possible upset or loss.
I will give you a name, and let me just see if you like kind of this potential fight booking. Aaron Pico versus Tywon Claxton.
I think that's a great fight booking, man. I really dig it. I really dig it, because those are two guys that are in very similar parts of their career. And I think to make it simple, or to like show under the hood, if I was the Bellator promoter, when I'm booking Aaron Pico, I'm putting him on that A side. It is in my best interest to get him and build him up to a championship fight. And Tywon Claxton is the type of opponent I would give him, because Claxton's a huge step up in competition, but his fight style doesn't scare me if I'm looking at it from Pico's perspective. So Jason, I think as a matchmaker, you may need to send your resume to Scott Coker.
I mean, look, I just think it's a fight that makes a lot of sense. Now, Daniel, the WTF moment in MMA since the last time we did a show together last Wednesday, to me, came on Monday as I'm sitting in my office and, you know, doing some things. And, you know, on my second screen, I always have TweetDeck up, and I see this image that comes across, you know, various MMA reporters tweeting about how the PFL has announced that Fabricio Werdum has signed with a promotion, and the graphic that was used by the PFL in this press release was it's got, you know, Fabricio on the right hand side of the image. It's got the PFL logo, a Brazil flag, and it says Fabricio Werdum, MMA heavyweight GOAT. And so I'm like, okay, hold on, I gotta go to my email. So I see this press release, and this was the quote from Peter Murray, the CEO of the PFL. Quote, I am excited to announce Fabricio Werdum, the Tom Brady of MMA, has signed with the Professional Fighters League. Fabricio is one of the greatest heavyweights of all time and knows when he steps into the PFL cage this coming season, it's more than a fight. The PFL sports season format provides an opportunity to control his destiny, like all PFL fighters, with a transparent shot to earn another major global title and the PFL Million Dollar Champions belt. WTF, Daniel, WTF. I'm just like, hold on. Okay, if you want to, first off, the narrative with this should be is, okay, PFL made a great signing, no question about it. And, you know, look, it's one of the things, and maybe this person's not going to like me saying this, but, you know, over the past couple of years, you know, one championship would always make these claims in press releases, and we'd all go, oh, Charger, you are just whatever. We're not going to believe you. Well, that PR person now works for the PFL. And so, like, I almost feel like I wonder how much of this was like, hey, man, we need to do something to get people talking about us. And so I see this and I go, okay, let me go look at Fabricio Werdum's resume. And I'm just like, I don't know how anyone can make look, if you want to say Fabricio Werdum is one of the greatest heavyweights to do this, okay, cool. Sign me up for that. I'm with you. But when you start talking about he's the heavyweight GOAT, get the F out of here with that crap. Because he's not. He's not. The GOAT, you know, like I think for older MMA fans, they would say Fedor. Newer MMA fans, it's Stipe Miocic. And like, I just looked at it, I was just like, oh my God. And then the line of the Tom Brady of MMA, what, because they're both 43 years old? Like, I have had the opportunity to now see Tom Brady up close and personal for the last, you know, 2 months, you know, being a part of the Buccaneers Radio Network, to, you know, to see. You know, obviously I knew Tom Brady was, you know, greatest of all time. There was no doubt about it. But to see him up close and personal, it offers me a different perspective of seeing how, you know, how he kind of works the ball around the field, how he kind of basically takes defenses, what he gives them. So, but I'm just like, to me, it's like, WTF, like, I seriously would love to sit down with Peter Murray and go, okay, tell me why he's the GOAT. Tell me why he's the Tom Brady of MMA. Because, I know it will never happen, but I feel like this is probably not what Peter Murray feels. I think this was a PR representative that did this to get attention.
Yeah, I mean, look, as a promotion, your goal is to promote your fighters, right? You're going to over-exaggerate and you're going to use hyperbole. But here's the thing. As a promotion, you have this thing called an audience, right? You have this thing of people who actually pay attention to what you say. And if you, as a promotion, are so hyperbolic and make so many false statements that your reputation is that you're full of, you know what, people will not listen to you. So when you actually have the heavyweight GOAT, when you actually have the best fighter in the world, people will not take that serious. And that's the danger of blowing smoke up your own butthole, because you're not selling it to anyone. No one's thinking you have the heavyweight GOAT. So that's an important note to lesson. And Scott Coker needs to realize this too. The amount of times I've heard him claim that each of his divisions is the best in the sport makes me want to puke, because I have a lot of respect for Scott Coker. I have a lot of respect for people putting on fights, but please don't insult our intelligence by saying things that are false. So obviously false. You're insulting Fabricio Werdum, who is one of the best heavyweights of all time. If we're doing a top 10 list of heavyweights, Fabricio Werdum is probably 5 or 6, right? He's probably behind Fedor. He's definitely behind Fedor and Stipe, probably behind Cain Velasquez. And I know he's beaten both Cain and Fedor, right? He does have wins over them. But when you start looking at their career resume, it doesn't really stack up. For Werdum, we're talking about 3 or 4 dope victories coming up against some of those guys past their prime, whereas a Fedor with Stipe, those list of high-quality wins are just blow Fabricio's resume out of the water. And then when you start looking at Cain, then again, I think Cain has a better case than Werdum. So those three guys I would absolutely put ahead of him. But it's just one of those things where, you know, and by the way, Werdum, a solid sign from PFL, not a great signing. Werdum in his last few performances remind me of my senior year of high school when I was mailing it in on my test because I already knew I was going to graduate. That's how he performed in the octagon, right? Like, that dude had a little bit of a pot belly, and I can't hate him. That guy's been grinding his whole career, right? Like, I would enjoy a cheeseburger, but he has not been performing well at all. And it's not like he's Tom Brady, right? He's more, I don't know, like a Phillip Rivers kind of, or Eli Manning is probably where I would go with Werdum. But the moral of the story is this: you're disrespecting Werdum because, like, he's a heavyweight all timer, but he's not the all time great heavyweight. It's like saying like a cheeseburger is the best food of all time, right? Like, that's disrespecting the cheeseburger, because now we have to crap on the cheeseburger. Even though everyone loves the cheeseburger, it's delicious, it just doesn't happen to be the best food of all time. That's unequivocally not true. A cheeseburger is not the last thing someone eats before they die, right? Like, if you're on death row and you're like, I want a cheeseburger, they should just kill you then and not even let you eat. That's a poor choice. So that's my whole point on this whole madness.
Yeah, give me a ribeye. That would be my choice. But like, one of the things that stuck out to me, and, you know, of course, you know, after, you know, I get this press release, I read like, okay, let me go to Fabricio Werdum's Wikipedia page, and you kind of forget the fact of he only had 3 UFC heavyweight title fights. He won the interim title against Mark Hunt in 2014. Then in 2015, unified the title when he defeated Cain Velasquez. Then he lost to Stipe Miocic. And I think maybe I texted to you, or maybe it was somebody else, and I said, if you were saying, who are the top 5 wins in Fabricio Werdum's career? Okay, so obviously Cain Velasquez. Obviously, Fedor Emelianenko. And then after that, it's like, okay, Overeem. Okay, there's 3. But then I look at the rest of this and I said, who's 4 and 5? I mean, I guess, you know, Big Nog, just because what Big Nog did throughout his career. And then number 5, is it Travis Brown?
I think it's someone of that ilk. And that does a perfect way of illustrating why Werdum is not the GOAT. The highest highs of his career are amazing. I mean, that's why I like the Eli Manning comparison, because Eli has the Super Bowls, but he has a lot of valleys too. And this is still a guy who's really respected. He still performed pretty dang good against solid heavyweights, But we're talking about greatest heavyweight of all time. And when we're rolling out the Stipe Miocic resume, when we're rolling out the Fedor Emelianenko resume, we're not stopping at four when it comes to Hall of Fame level victories. We're continuing to go down that list. And I think the way you frame it there perfectly illustrates why, although Verdum is respected as an all-time heavyweight, to call him the GOAT, I mean, to continue on with the farm animals, to call him the GOAT is BS.
Yeah, it's just one of those things of like the narrative should be, it's a great signing for the PFL, but it becomes a WTF moment of the week when the PFL CEO calls him the Tom Brady of mixed martial arts. Of course, this is the MMA Report podcast. Well, I'll let you know about one of our sponsors that this week, and that is Roman. A healthy life includes a healthy sex life, but if you struggle with erectile dysfunction, you may not feel your best self. If you want help with ED, Roman connects you with a real U.S. licensed healthcare professional who can prescribe the medicine you need.
With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship you real medicine with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. And getting started is so simple. You just go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport and complete an online visit. Go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to talk about, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it.
As you heard Daniel say, just go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport to get $15 off your first order of ED treatment, a free online visit, and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport for $15 off your first order of ED treatment. GetRoman.com/MMAReport. Now, Daniel, earlier this week, you sent me this list that ESPN put together. It's the top 25 MMA fighters under 25 years old, and the graphic that they put up on social media had the top 10, but they actually came up with 25 fighters that are under the age of 25 years old, and some of the names stuck out to me. I don't know if there was a clear number one for me. I would not say I don't disagree with who their number one is. And their number one was Jimmy Crute, number two, Edmund Shahbazyan, three, Song Yadong, four, Aaron Pico, five, Brendan Allen. When you saw this list, what was your initial thoughts when you saw some of the names on this list?
I thought the list was fine, right? I thought they did a great job. They brought in some of the top talents in ONE FC. They brought in Angela Lee. They brought in Christian Lee. They even brought in the flyweight champion of ONE FC. Joshua Pasio. They brought in people who weren't a part of the UFC, as well as a laundry list of the premier UFC prospects. So I thought this list was well done, and it was a really fun look. When I'm looking at this list, I guess my two takeaways are this. Number one, for the top five, for those that haven't seen the list, Jimmy Crute is number one. Edmund Shahbazyan, number two. Song Yadong, number three. Aaron Pico, number four. Brendan Allen, number five. My general thought with this list is, one, I think Edmund Shahbazyan is probably the number one fighter on this list if I had to make it. I know he's coming off that loss to Derek Brunson. But when it comes to who are the best fighters under 25, I think Shahbazyan's better than Jimmy Crute. It also stands out that Shahbazyan's 22 years old. It's like, damn, that's unbelievable. My other thought, though, is I would have thought the list would have been a little bit better, like in terms of quality of fighters. Like this list is filled with fighters that are really good, but I thought we were going to have 7 to 10 like blue chip, these are top five fighters in the future, and we probably will, and the list isn't awful, but the list is a little lukewarm. I don't know why, but I just felt as though when I was looking at this list, it didn't have, I mean, just the fact that it included Sage Northcutt, I think tells you there is a little bit of, it's really hard to be that successful and MMA that quick in your career. So I guess this list, what it does is it puts in perspective how impressive it is to be that successful before you even turn 25 years old, is what I would say. I thought we were going to have a couple more supernovas on the list, but they just don't exist right now.
You know, as I look through 1 through 25, the one fire that really sticks out to me that I think if you do this survey 1 year from now, I think this fighter is going to be much, much higher than 13th, and that is Miranda Maverick. I think she will definitely be in the top 10 at next year. I think as, you know, as I look at this list and I say, who do I see as fighters that can become world champions? You look at Jimmy Crute, 205 pounds. You know, you mentioned about Shabazz, and he's only 22 years old. Aaron Pico, we mentioned about him a little bit earlier about, you know, what we've seen under the leadership of Jackson Wink. I mean, I this is a guy that if you tell me in 2 years he's a Bellator featherweight champion, I wouldn't be surprised. Macy Barber, you know, interesting to kind of see how does she bounce back from the knee injury. She just got booked to take on Alexa Grosso in February of next year. James Gallagher is number 7. I'm not high on James Gallagher as some may be. I think that when you look at, you know, there's obviously since he lost to Ricky Bandejas, it's been very selective matchmaking for James Gallagher. I mean, I saw Patchy Mix kind of throw it out there that maybe he's going to take on James Gallagher. If that's the case, whatever that betting line is, I might have to go out to Vegas and just place a bet because I'll place a bet on Patchy Mix in that one. Sabina Mazo was on this list as well. Some of the other fighters that kind of stuck out to me that were on this list. You mentioned about, one championship fighters that are on this list. Angela Lee, who's only 24 years old. She turns 25 next year. She is someone that definitely sticks out to me. Even though she lost this past week in Kay Anson, definitely is someone to pay attention to on this list. Chase Hooper was on this list. Usman Nurmagomedov, who was recently signed by Bellator, that is someone to pay attention to. And you look at Yusuf Zalal, who made this list, a guy that trains out of there at Denver, signed by the UFC at the beginning of this year. He definitely is someone to pay attention to. But I think when I kind of looked at this list, there were some fighters that I guess I thought they were younger than 25, like an AJ McKee. He was one of the ones that I was like, man, AJ is older than 25, but yeah, he is.
Mm-hmm. Sean O'Malley too was another one, and then both those guys just now aged out of that list. And let me ask you a question, and I'll go on a little diatribe so you can think about it. When you look at this list of 25 fighters, Jason, I told you, you're an MMA promotion. Which three of these top 25 would you most want to add to your promotion? So think about that, chew it over while I just make one quick point. And the point is this: when you're looking at fighters who I think will be much higher next year, I think the two are family members. I think you're looking at the Nurmagomedovs. I think you're looking at Umar Nurmagomedov in the UFC, and I think in Bellator, I think Usman Nurmagomedov is probably going to make the biggest leap from 18 to somewhere in the top 10 within a year if he's able to get some fights. So those are the two fighters I would look at. And then the other thing is Song Yadong, I think is well placed, and it speaks to how talented he is. So Jason, if you were to pick up three fighters from this roster to your hypothetical MMA promotion, which three would you deem the most valuable?
Number 1, Aaron Pico. Number 2, Macy Barber. Number 3, Evan Shabazian.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you could switch out Shabazian with someone, but that would be really, really tough to do. Because Shabazian, out of anyone on this list, has proven this is a top caliber fighter. Like, top 10 for the next 10 years type fighter. But I think he nailed it. I think Pico's absolutely number 1. I think Barber's absolutely number 2.
Yeah, I mean, I think Macy, it's not just what she does inside of competition, but I think she has that ability to get people to the television set, which that's the thing that promoters are trying to do. I mean, obviously, I look at Aaron Pico. I don't care whether he's fighting on a Bellator main card or a Bellator preliminary card. I'm tuning in to watch him fight just because I know, what I can potentially see. There's certain fighters that you say they're fighting, you're like, I got to find my way to a television set. When I think about the UFC, like, you tell me Justin Gaethje is fighting, I got to find my way to the television set. You sit there, and from a PFL aspect, you tell me Kayla Harrison is fighting, I got to find my way to the television set. And that's what, to me, what Aaron Pico has the ability to do. But, these are always very fascinating lists to kind of look back a year, 2 years from now, to see how these fighters do develop and who can become, you know, world champions. You know, Umar Nurmagomedov, that's a tremendous signing by Bellator. You know, that's one of those signings that you just kind of expected he would ultimately end up in the UFC. By the way, did you see that Khabib has not left the USADA drug testing program?
That guy's going to fight again. He's going to fight again. I mean, it's going to happen. I thought he was retired. He's going to go for 30, no. I mean, he's going to fight again. Like, I can't believe we thought he wasn't going to fight again, Jason. Like, how dumb are we? He's going to fight again.
Also, and speaking of fighters who have not left the USADA drug testing program, Daniel Cormier has not left the USADA testing program. Now, he said, I was listening to his show yesterday, that he said, look, you know, he goes, look, I just like getting drug tested. He goes, I like, you know, being a clean guy. I like, sit there and have coffee with USADA drug tester programs. But I was like, come on, Daniel, when you sit there and you're not leading the USADA drug testing program, because apparently he wants to just have more negative tests than John Jones. Like, you're leaving everyone to say, you're not retired.
Yep, 100%. I mean, Brock Lesnar is the only guy who left that, like, he ran away. As soon as he announced his retirement, he ran away from those drug testers. He was like, no more positive tests. But if you're still getting tested, I mean, that lets you know. In Nurmagomedov's case, he's definitely coming back in my mind. In DC's case, I think deep down inside, that John Jones fight is probably going to happen. I just think there's a part of it. I don't know if he's going to come back, but there are some nights when he's tossing and turning in bed and he's starting to project what it would look like to get in that one last fight camp to take out his career rival.
I wonder that when the UFC, when a fighter announces their retirement and then it's like 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 weeks after the fact and they haven't left the USADA drug testing program, like, you got to know that that's got to be Mick Maynard, Sean Shelby, Dana White going, I don't think that guy's retired. Because if he was retired, why would you sit there and want to be telling USADA where you're at all times and whatnot? But yeah, it's one of those things that, like, if Cormier was offered a fight against John Jones today, how does he say no?
I don't know, man. I think that's a real possibility. I don't think it's more than 50%, but I think that fight happening is in the next year and a half. 35% possibility is probably what I would frame it at. It's a hard thing to say no to, because beating John Jones would not only, well, fighting him in the first place would put a lot of money in his bank account. But we're talking about one singular thing he has to do to completely change the narrative around his legacy. He's already a legend. He's already one of the best of all time. But a win over John Jones puts him in the GOAT discussion.
Oh, no, you're spot on. I mean, it's Cormier. You know, it's like someone, I was texting with somebody on Monday about the whole Verdum thing, and they said, you know what, to me, they said they would put Cormier in there as someone to consider as the MMA heavyweight goat. And, but, I mean, look, I love listening to Daniel Cormier talk about the fight game, because, you know, I feel like he's just one of those guys that I feel like I learned something new about. Of course, DC will be on the call this weekend for UFC 255. John Anik on the play-by-play, and Joe Rogan will be a part of this one. I will not be watching UFC 255 live. I'm spending since the Bucks are playing on Monday, I'm spending the weekend with my wife and our nieces, and, you know, have a little family time here. But, you know, we do got Bellator and the UFC this weekend. And, you know, I was thinking about this. Think about both these cards. And look, I think that, you know, look, is UFC 255 that top tier pay-per-view for the UFC? No. But I think top to bottom, it's a pretty damn good fight card. I'll be honest with you. Outside of the two top, I would say outside of the men's flyweight title fight, because look, the female flyweight title fight, I think we all kind of know what's going to happen there. Because I looked the other day, I want to say Valentina's like a 14-1 betting favorite or something crazy. I'll look at it here momentarily. But I would say this outside of the two title fights, the fight that interests me the most on UFC 255 was actually on the prelims, and that'll be Bram Moreno and Brandon Royval. But let me, I was thinking about this earlier today, Daniel. If you say the best fight of the weekend is X, any chance you say Darren Caldwell versus AJ McKee?
Yeah, I think there's a great chance for sure. I think the best fight of the weekend is the UFC main event, though. But It's close. I think Caldwell McKee is a much more compelling fight. I mean, I think Figueiredo goes in against Perez as a bigger favorite. But the idea of watching Davison Figueiredo and Perez compete to me is a little more exciting. I mean, I think Figueiredo has real star power. He stood out in that Fight Island documentary, and he's just stood out in the cage. But as a general fight, I think the Caldwell McKee fight is very compelling because you can talk yourself into both guys. It's a fight where the ceiling is really high on both McKee and Caldwell. McKee is climbing up the ladder. Caldwell's already been at the top. And this is just a phenomenal dynamic. The winner goes to the finals, and it's tough because if you straight up told me, Daniel, you can only watch one fight this weekend, even though I'm hyping up Figueiredo Perez, I think I'd say Caldwell McKee. And maybe it is the best fight. I mean, I'm kind of talking myself into it being the best. Because, like, I know we have championship fights, but Shevchenko Maia is fine. It's just, like, Shevchenko is such a – it's just not very compelling to me. Like, I think Valentina is going to run through her, right? Like I think Valentina is going to lose through a lapse, whereas – McKee Caldwell, the more I think about it, the more I salivate under it. I mean, that might be the best fight. You could be right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking on bestfightodds.com and the line on Shevchenko runs anywhere from 13-1 betting favorite to as much as a 17-1 betting favorite. So I think we kind of know it's going to go there. You know, one of the things that I found really interesting, I was watching the Countdown show on Monday, and you know, part of it was about Colin Oyama, you know, the head coach of Alex Perez, you know, kind of, you know, talking about when Alex came, you know, to the gym and everything about him. And, you know, they were talking about, because obviously a big narrative with this title fight is the fact that Alex is now the first fighter to come from the Contender Series to fight for a UFC title. So Dana White was asked about it a little bit last night, kind of correlating it to, you know, when, you know, fighters. So I want to say Forrest Griffin was the first fighter to fight for a title, you know, from the Ultimate Fighter to the UFC.
Well, no.
Sarah.
But that doesn't really count. That doesn't count because the winner of that show got the title shot. So I'm just being a dick. But I think Forrest is the real one.
Yeah, no, I get you. But he has said, he's like, look, you know, the level in the Contender Series is just at another level than what was Ultimate Fighter. And look, and the reason it is just has this game has evolved. But one of the things I found interesting watching the Countdown show was Colin Oyama said that he believes that the Contender Series is ultimately the proper, it's because there's so much pressure going into it that is actually the best route to go to the UFC. And I thought about it. I was like, you know what? I think Oyama's right about that. Is because you're going into that situation where you know you have a great performance, you're getting into the UFC. If you go out there and not have a great performance, you likely are not getting offered a contract. So I was like, you know what? I agree with what Colin Oyama said, that, you know, the Contender Series is a great way to get into the UFC because it puts that pressure on you just to get into the UFC that you just can't get if you're fighting in, you know, any regional promotion.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you're getting those experiences only on the Contender Series, or if you spent some time competing in the PFL or, you know, a higher stakes promotion like Bellator, KSW, 1FC. But there's a dramatic difference because of what you laid out, which is that, like, it's now or never, all or nothing type thing where there's a lot of pressure. I mean, we saw fighters in the season finale yesterday who have won but did not get signed. So not only do you have to win, you have to look impressive. But we saw those fighters get their contract the second time around. And I think he's right. And I think, look, the Contender Series, Alex Perez will not be the last guy if this happens. I mean, the Contender Series is just, it's another way of UFC just signing the best talent in the sport. I mean, that's where you find the best regional talent, the best up-and-coming prospects. So we're going to have so many guys and girls with experience on the Contender Series challenge for titles. I think in this one, Figueiredo's the clear winner. I mean, I think this pay-per-view is going to be one of the worst pay-per-views of the year in terms of buy rate. Like, I don't know a single casual fan that is interested in the show, you know? And it sucks because there are good fights. You mentioned Moreno Royval in the prelims. Beautiful fight. I love it. I love watching Brandon Royval fight and Moreno as well. But it's just, it just, this pay-per-view, I think it's going to do really bad. I just do not know a human being who is not a hardcore MMA fan that is going to spend $65 for these two championship fights. These fights just do not register. People do not know who Alex Perez is, and they don't know who Jennifer Maya is. You'd be lucky if they knew Davison was the flyweight champion.
No, you're spot on about that. I mean, look, I think overall it's a good fight card, but yeah, I think you're spot on that it's probably going to be the lowest buy rate for the UFC in 2020. Now, before we kind of continue talking on about these fights that are going to happen on Thursday and Saturday, I want to let you know about our other sponsor this week, and that is Fubo TV. When you want to cut the cord, but you're worried about missing out on live TV, get the best of both worlds with Fubo TV. You can watch live and on demand with no bulky set-top box.
Jason, think about this, all right? The monthly cost of cable is over $200. Fubo TV is $65 a month to watch the same channels. And you don't pay for DVR installation. Dude, Fubo TV is how you should be watching TV. You get everything you want in one place, everything. And it's way, way, way less the cost of cable. It brings you over 100 of channels. Get this, a cloud DVR, no hidden fees. Stream your shows on your TV or any smart device. And we're big sport fans, all right? With Fubo TV, you'll never miss a game. They have the NFL, the NBA, MLB, NHL, Premier League, La Liga, college sports, and more. Fubo TV is amazing. I love, love, love the fact that I'm able to use it on my smartphone and watch stuff while I'm pretending to get work done at work. I get to watch Monday Night Football. I get to watch the NBA draft tonight. I love Fubo TV.
And there's no risk to try it out. Get full access to Fubo TV for a few days for free. And right now, Fubo TV is offering our listeners the free trial and 15% off your first month by going to FUBOTV.com/MMAreport. There are no contracts and you can cancel anytime. Go to FUBOTV.com/MMAreport. That's FUBOTV.com/MMAreport for 15% off your first month and a free trial. That's FUBOTV.com/MMAreport. And of course, if you want to watch, you know, the CBS Sports Network, you can check it out there. You can also check out the prelims for UFC 255, which will be on ESPN. We've talked a little bit. So I want to go back to Bellator here for a little bit. We talked about, you know, Caldwell and McKee. You got Benson Henderson back up at 170 pounds, taking on Jason Jackson. Joey Davis, Bobby Lee will be the third fight on the main card. There is only three fights on the main card. Really interested to kind of see Bobby Lee making his Bellator debut. Of course, we all know Joey Davis. You know, Rafion Stouts is on the preliminary card. We got Jeremy Kennedy making his Bellator debut, taking on Matt Massetti, returns for promotion. Jaleel Willis is back, taking on Mark Leminger. You know, so those are, you know, overall, I think the Bellator card is a nice fight card, but no question, McKee Caldwell is a go there. That it, what interests me the most about Caldwell and McKee is, will this be, you know, I think that if you're in the AJ McKee camp, the thought has got to be is we got to make Darren Caldwell fight on the feet, even though AJ McKee obviously is a tremendous overall fighter, does everything well, whether it's standing, striking, wrestling, grappling, jiu-jitsu, does everything well. But I would have to imagine that his father's thought process is, look, we know Darren Caldwell is a wrestler. We got to keep this fight on the feet. We got to make him stand up, where obviously Caldwell, to me, he wants to get the fight to the ground. I like AJ McKee in the fight. I just think he's a better overall MMA fighter, but this is kind of like, I would say, like, if I was placing a betting odds, and I want to say AJ McKee is like a 2-1 betting favorite in this one. I don't even know if I'd go that high on AJ McKee. I'm not saying it's a pick 'em fight. I mean, I would probably say if you told me, you know, out of 10 times, how many times did AJ McKee win? I'd probably go 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I do think it's really close. I really do, because I think it's hard not to come out here and pick AJ McKee. It just feels a lot more fun, right? Like, he's performed so well. In this fight in particular, I think he is someone where you really like him no matter where the fight plays out. The concern is probably for Caldwell's ability to just score points of positional control more so than anything else. I think when you're looking at different aspects of this fight, McKee's probably going to get the better of him. While Caldwell still has a real chance to finish it at any point, he's shown that explosive nature. I think you feel a lot better about the blend McKee possesses from a skill set standpoint when you contrast it with what's going on with Caldwell. So I think that, as well as with the fact that McKee, again, more so than Darian, has bigger upside about what he can accomplish today, tomorrow, and in the future, I think McKee's the pick. But the idea of Darian Caldwell playing the role of spoiler is significant. He has been battle-tested. He's had big failures in big spots, which leads and breeds learning how to deal with that. And so McKee is just trying to get to a place Darian Caldwell has already been. And that's where you look for an advantage with Caldwell. I still think McKee's going to win this fight, but this is a damn good fight.
I can't deny, you want to know a reason why I want to see AJ McKee win this fight? Is I want to see AJ McKee, Patricio Pitbull in the finals of this tournament.
I think as soon as the bracket was laid out, I mean, that's the number one matchup everyone wanted to see. Simple as that. And I think if we do happen to get that, this is a beautiful way to get there. We didn't have AJ get rushed to that spot. We saw him earn it, going up against top guys in a field of 16. So, Jason, I think that thought is very common among a litany of Bellator fans. That is the fight we want to see at the end of this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see whether that does happen or not. But you know, for me, the reason to tune in on Thursday night, no question, is because of that main event. Really a great matchup between those two. And then, you know, let's go back over to UFC 255. And, you know, we got a rematch on the main card of Shogun Hua and Paul Craig. You realize, could we potentially be not that far away from a Glover Teixeira Shogun Hua title fight in the UFC?
Yeah, I mean, this past weekend we had the youngest ever combination, right, between Kay Hansen and Corey McKenna, and I think there's a chance we'd have the oldest ever combination of, at least for a championship fight, between Glover and Shogun. I mean, there's a possibility. I mean, Shogun might come out here and beat Paul Craig, for instance, but I do think Hua, if you just do a Russian roulette, you know, those top five light heavyweights, I think he loses pretty convincingly to each of them. So for him to get to that fight, he's going to have to benefit from proper matchmaking, from Mick Maynard and Sean Shelby taking care of him. I mean, what he's done at this part of his career is pretty damn impressive, just to stay afloat, much less afloat, to be successful in the UFC. After going through the amount of wars he's gone through, after competing for as long as he has, I mean, if you're Shogun Hua and you look across from you, the people that were in the gym with you when you first started your career are sitting down now if they're there. They're not on the training mats anymore. He's one of the last warriors standing from his era, and he's still standing tall. I think he beats Paul Craig, but I think whatever fight he gets next probably won't be too great for him.
I got a stat to blow your mind, Daniel. Do you realize Mauricio Shogun Hua is only 1 year older than Alan Joe Blaine?
No, that's insane. That's Alan Joe Blaine has boyish good looks. How old is Alan? How old is Alan?
37.
That's insane to me. That does blow my mind. Wow. Yeah, Alan Joe Blaine looks like he's 27. He looks like he was just on that episode of The Bachelorette, to be honest with you. Damn. That's a crazy stat, bro. Yeah, you blew my mind. By the way, did the Shevchenko sisters like demand to be on every card with one another, or is this a matter of the matchmaker putting them on the same card? Because every single time Valentina fights, Antonina is also on that card. And so is Caitlin Chookagian, by the way. Is she the third Shevchenko sister?
I would see where it would make sense, where Valentina says, hey, you know, it makes things easier for us in terms of, you know, with the coaching and aspect. And I know they've been training in Vegas for that one. As I always say to people is Antonina is not her sister. There is a big difference there. You know, as I look kind of the rest of this card, you mentioned about Kayla Chookagian, she's taking on Cynthia Calvillo. You know, Calvillo could really put herself right in a great line of, you know, making her case for potentially Maybe she gets the winner of Shevchenko and Maya. You know, some of the other ones. You know, I'm interested to see Joaquin Buckley of how does he perform after that viral knockout of the year that he had earlier this year. Is he going to be a guy that's going to be chasing that knockout? I will tell you, Jordan Wright, I think, is somebody, if you're looking for a betting underdog this week, Jordan Wright may be a guy to look at. I think that it's going to be a lot of people remember what they last saw out of Joaquin Buckley, but Jordan Wright to me is one of those ones. You know, also I would say that I think the fire that on the prelims, I'm just really interested in, and I actually had a chance to speak to him last week, and that's Lewis Koski, of course, you know, coming off, you know, winning on the Contender Series, him and his brother winning on the same night, getting UFC contracts. His brother unfortunately unable to fight due to an injury here. He's probably the guy on the prelims as I think about, you know, how are they going to develop? He's a guy that's very interesting to me. You know, he did tell me, he's like, look at this division. He goes, for a while, I'm going to be an undersized guy. He mentioned to me that really has never been a weight training type of athlete. But, you know, working with the PI, they've got him on, you know, on a plan to help, you know, boost what he can do in terms of his strength and conditioning. So he's a guy that really sticks out to me. You know, I mentioned about Moreno Royval. I mean, I think that's a great fight. And Daniel, I'm picking Brandon Royval to win.
Look, man, I think that's a solid pick, and I think in that one, look, every time Royval's put in this position, he wins. I think Moreno beats him, but Brandon Royval might be a special kid. I mean, he could absolutely challenge for the flyweight championship in the first part of 2021. I mean, he's on that trajectory if he continues to be successful. I think when you're looking at this fight card, I think Royval Moreno is appetizing. I think it's great to get Buckley back in there. I think that's an interesting call on Jordan Wright. Sometimes when you have the type of knockout that isn't repeatable, people get too high on the guy, and I think you're right to point out the value in Wright. But look, in addition to that Royval Moreno fight, I mean, Tim Means and Mike Perry is the other one that you look at and you think that's just a banger of a fight. Right, I mean, Means and Perry both have reputations as very exciting fighters, and I think there's a reason why that one's on the main card. So I definitely think those are two bad, mean dudes. I think Mike Perry, outside of the cage, has more issues than the Amazing Spider-Man. But I think between these two, the fight itself is going to be quite compelling. I mean, you are going to see two guys punch each other in the head a lot of times in entertaining fashion. So that's why I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that should be a fun fight to watch. You know, you would imagine that's a fight that does play on the feed. I know I was looking at Mike Perry's Instagram the other day, and it looks like pretty much he's just been down there at ATT. Did not look like he's at Coconut Creek ATT. It looks like he's up maybe at Roger Crawl's ATT gym, which is just north of Coconut Creek. Daniel Rodriguez, I think, is another fighter to pay attention to this car, Kyle Daukaus. But overall, I think even if you do not want to spend the $65 to watch this pay-per-view, I think that you've got a quality, you know, fight night card, a part of the the early prelims and the regular prelims. I think that if you sit there and say, hey, you know what, I'm just not going to spend the $65, I do think there's some entertaining fights that you can catch on ESPN and ESPN Plus.
Yeah, I think the hardcore fans are going to be rewarded tuning into this entire card. There are a lot of fights for you. As a casual observer, you will not get what you're looking for when you purchase this pay-per-view, unfortunately. But as a hardcore fan, I mean, any opportunity to see Valentina defend her title is worth it, right? She's a legend, a living legend, one of the best female fighters of all time. Davison, again, he has star potential. He just looks like a star with his bleached hair and his sunglasses and his nice suits. The question is, will he continue to perform like one when he's not fighting Joseph Benavidez? We get to get that answer. So I'm looking forward to these fights. Anytime you see championship fights, your ears perk up, you pop your collar, you get excited. So I'm looking forward to this weekend. We have a great weekend of fights ahead of us from both promotions.
And let's be honest about it, part of the biggest question with Davison Figueiredo is, will he make weight on Friday?
Yeah. I mean, it's a difficult process for him each and every time. And I think that's a big time factor to get down to 125.
And look, I'll say this. Don't count out Alex Perez. If you tell me Alex Perez is a UFC flyweight champion on Sunday, I would not be surprised.
Yep. If you told me Jennifer Maya is, I would be surprised. I would be super surprised. But Perez, hell no.
I don't see how Jennifer Maia gets it done. I just don't, you know, and maybe I'll look like an idiot by saying that, but I just don't see how she gets the job done.
Yeah. I mean, Valentina's at a point in her career where whenever she loses, it's going to be more about her than her opponent. You know, we're not going to give her opponent credit. We're just going to be like, well, you know, Valentina just slipped up. So could Maia win? Absolutely. Right. There's one lesson that's been beaten into our skull as a fan of this sport. It's that anything can happen. The probability, minuscule.
Yeah, I will tell you this. One of the things I mentioned here before we get out of here for this week's edition of the podcast, I don't know if you saw this. Max Holloway, Calvin Kattar headlines a card in January. Sign me up for that. I got to make sure I'm front of my television when those two guys start banging it out.
That's an amazing fight. I mean, that's a big-time fight for Calvin Kattar. I mean, that's essentially – I mean, Max Holloway could be the featherweight champion right now if different people were judging that fight. So, I mean, that's a banger of a fight. I think it's going to be exciting. I'm hyped for that, and I cannot wait. I mean, the thing that got my attention is, you know, amidst this pandemic and, you know, coronavirus cases rising or whatever, a return to normalcy. I saw this tweet from Ariel Helwani yesterday. He said, this is from last night, "Very, very busy week ahead of MMA. Good to see these events are happening this weekend starting tomorrow. We have CFFC 88, Brave 45, Bellator, CFFC, a 1FC card, an Invicta card, Icon 3, LFA, Rising Tide, and Octagon UFC." You know, amidst these tough times, it is nice to see so many fighters gain opportunities to make a paycheck doing this sport.
You bringing up that point makes me think about watching Dana White's interview with Lorisenko after a contender series last night, where, you know, he kind of mentioned about, you know, with what 2020 has been, one of the things that, you know, does concern him is the fact of, you know, you got all these small promotions that are unable to do shows. And he ended by saying, he goes, "Well, I guess I need to sign some of these promotions UFC Fight Pass."
Yeah, I think he should. I think he should. I mean, I don't know where the money's coming from. They're not really adding value to the Fight Pass, but hey, man, give them some cheddar. Give them cheddar. But, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, no matter what happens, the world is going to dust themselves off whenever this is over, and we're going to get back to work. And we may have different promotions. We may have some promotions shut down, but there's still going to be a passion for this sport. I mean, people at the lowest level do it to break even or make some money. But the passion is there, and you're still going to have a group of promoters, a group of people that are going to want to put on shows. So it's good to see all these fight cards. Hopefully we'll see more of them on Fight Pass. But I'm happy to see those, and I hope they're able to make a buck, because that's really hard without the large-scale in-person attendance.
Well, yeah, I mean, some of the issues just, you know, I mean, we all see what's going on in our world with, you know, states shutting down of, you know, there'll be promoters that just are not going to have the ability to put on shows. I mean, that's part of it. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, last night was the season finale of the Contender Series. Dana did not say, you know, when the plans are to bring back the Contender Series next year. Of course, he's turning his sights to the Ultimate Fighter, which is going to start filming in January. Going to be middleweights and bantamweights. I know, you know, he did offer a spot to Nick Maximov, who is a, you know, he typically will fight either 85, 205, but because of opponent pulling out due to COVID, he ended up fighting a man at heavyweight that probably had, you know, he mentioned probably 60 pounds on him on fight night, trains out of the Nick Diaz Academy. So we'll see if he takes that spot. I know bantamweight that I'm friends with on Facebook, Cole Farrell, who's out of Georgia. He has, you know, said that, kind of indicating that he's going to try out for the show. So we'll see what happens there with the Ultimate Fighter. And as I mentioned, it's been a long time since I've watched the Ultimate Fighter, but it is a way for the UFC to acquire talent. Also, it's a way for them to try to sell some storylines. So we'll see that. Of course, as always, be sure to give us a follow on social media. I am at Jason_Floyd. Daniel is at Daniel Galvan, DGG. Of course, be sure to check out our sponsors this week. Up first, you go over to GetRoman.com/MMAReport to get $15 off your first ED treatment, a free online visit, and free day two free 2-day shipping. And for the MMA Report podcast listeners, Fubo TV is offering a free trial and 15% off your first month when you go to FuboTV.com/MMA Report. So that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Sunday and Wednesday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Landry Football Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Looks like we're headed to a greater propensity of these games getting, well, in some cases canceled, and some to this point postponed, but we're running out of postponing dates. I have a real concern, and I really think there needs to be a concerted effort, particularly at the big-time level, and I know that it is expensive, but let me remind folks that, for example, the SEC loses money by not having the Alabama-LSU game being played. CBS doesn't have to pay. They get a rebate for that game not being televised. So there's money at stake or money lost when you can't play. So it would behoove, in my mind, I would look at it. And, of course, college football is so poorly organized, so poorly run, and it's so individually run, that I think at the major college level it would make a whole lot of sense and would make a lot of sense for them to say, look, most of the colleges are sending their kids home for Thanksgiving in a week, and they're not bringing their kids back to campus. It's going to be virtual learning for the rest of the semester. It would make all the sense in the world to basically, in a bubble, bubble up your teams like you saw in the NBA, Major League Baseball. I think it would make a lot of sense to, yes, it would cost money, but you could perhaps save the rest of the season. I just think it would make a lot of sense.
The Landry Football Podcast with veteran scout and coach Chris Landry can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.